approaching their two-year anniversary, the Flagstaff Community Alliance Response and Engagement, or CARE program, continues to support the linkage of community members experiencing crisis with resources that match community member needs. I'm Matt Eckhoff with Communauté Community Consulting on behalf of the Vitalist Health Foundation. And today, we continue to celebrate the work of leaders across Arizona to build stronger first responder and mental health system linkages. And today, highlighting the way one Arizona community is strengthening first responder and mental health partnerships, we're joined by Seth Greger, Emergency Medical Services Captain with the Flagstaff Fire Department, as well as Brian Guest, Director of Northern Arizona Crisis Services, and Brad Mattingly, Crisis Clinical Manager, both with Taros Health. So today, our conversation is intended to dive into the nitty-gritty and share what the City of Flagstaff and Taros Health have done to build the CARE program over the last 2 years. We're so thankful to hear your insights, your celebrations, and advice to other communities working to advance their own services to support individuals in crisis. So let's dive in. Brian, I'm going to put you on the spot first. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Matt. Thanks for having us.
Happy to have you here. Thank you so much. So you and your team have been working on this partnership for quite some time. What finally sparked this particular collaboration around CARE to bring Taros and the City of Flagstaff together to provide the services you're providing today?
Yeah, I think in our community in particular, in Flagstaff, it was obvious for years that we have some problems in the community that weren't a good fit for traditional first responders, police, ambulance, fire. They all do wonderful things for the community, but there's some concerns, especially relating to mental health and substance use, where those first responders just don't have the tools and resources to best address some of the concerns that we're seeing. So that had been, I think, something that people saw in the community for years. And then, it became more of a national conversation in recent years about, policing and different ways to respond to emergencies where mental health was and substance use was a factor. So I think it was the confluence of sort of a known issue plus the additional attention on, sort of nationally on different methods for first responding that kind of brought this to a point where the City of Flagstaff, said, let's go ahead and actually put some money toward a solution for this. So they put out a request for proposals several years ago to partner with a mental health agency. And we were lucky enough, Taros was, to be chosen as that mental health agency.
So Brian, you bring up some really good points about, the inception of a program and, how this partnership was built. Can you go back in the archives to the days when the Flagstaff City Council and city leadership and fire department leadership was really looking to set this program up and, anything that would strike you now, knowing what you know now, that you would want another agency and another community to know to really build that leadership buy-in and to really build strong communication to build a strong program?
Yeah, I think community partnerships are extremely important and involving the community at large in the conversation and getting their input on, how to best implement a program like this was hugely important. I know early on there was quite a bit of skepticism from different areas of the community about how a program like this would work. For example, would it be too dangerous to send in unarmed, mental health people into some of these situations? Or, is there bigger priorities like more affordable housing, things like that, that the money could be going toward? And I think while those points were valid, especially that the housing point, which is, affordable housing is always an issue in this community and lots of other places. Even though those are also issues, I think this specific program really filled a niche that that wasn't filled before, and that it's not the end-all be-all solution for all of the community's problems, but it's certainly a huge step in the right direction. And I think, and we tried really hard before the program launched to have just open conversations and question and answer sessions with the community and with other community agencies to sort of talk through some of those concerns and skepticism that they had.
Absolutely. I think, you know, the groundwork that you all laid, you know, over the course of, you know, several months, if not years, was certainly beneficial to the success that, you know, the care unit is seeing today. With that transition, Seth, I want to jump over to you. You're the EMS captain with Flagstaff Fire Department. You're overseeing the care unit. I want to get into some nitty-gritty of how you're doing things from a medical direction and a 911 integration perspective. But first, I just want to ask you what you want to chime in with, you know, after hearing, you know, Brian's intro about the program, kind of the beginning and the inception of the program, and anything you want to add before I kind of dive into some of those specific questions to share with others.
Thank you, Matt, for that opportunity, and good morning. So I would be doing a disservice if I didn't recognize one person that was actually really heavily involved with this since the inception, and Brian knows him very well, which was Mike Feltz, who actually was in, took the role of this program and trying to get it up. He worked hard. He overcame a lot of obstacles on the fire side to get that buy-in to address a community problem that that I've seen in the last 18 years of what we categorize them in our dispatch system as a man down, which is an unknown medical problem or a mental health issue that is going on in the community. The goal that he tried to do and that he was given direction through by the city was we need to reduce the calls, these type of calls on the fire trucks and the police officers. And as you'll see later on in this this talk, is you'll see the results are pretty staggering. And, you know, the big part that the guys and gals on the line are seeing that are on those fire trucks are they're seeing the difference, and they're not having to take the big red truck, as we call them, to these type of calls. And as Brian said, that's not always the right solution for these individuals and the people that are struggling with the mental health issues that we are seeing. So the inception was a lot of work on Mike's end, and I'd be doing, like I said, a disservice if I didn't recognize all the hard work that he and Brian put together with the city and other community partners to make this get in place. So sorry, Matt, can you follow up with that second question?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, there's so many follow-up questions. And really what I'm getting at is, you know, kind of the step-by-step playbook that you guys put in place. I mean, you and, you know, Captain Feltz have been, you know, like I said, at this for a while. And, you know, before you went live operationally with, you know, alternate response via 911, that didn't just happen. That was a ton of work to make happen. So I'm just really curious if you could speak to some of those, you know, internal policy pieces that you guys have been working on. You know, you're talking about buy-in among, you know, the firefighting, you know, the crews, but also how about medical direction? What did that look like? 911 integration, what did that look like? If you can just, you know, dive into, you know, either of those, both of those, your perspective on those would be great.
Yeah, I'll start with the 911 side. It is and it continues to be a challenge with our dispatchers. They go through a lot of turnover and they go through a lot of training obstacles. And my presence in dispatch is heavy, just because they're always having questions on, does this fall into the category? And some of those categories are third party callers, where someone is driving by with their cell phone, they see this individual down, they don't know the status, they don't know if they're breathing, if it's a mental health issue, they don't know what's going on with this person, but it was decided and a good fit for the CARES to respond those type of calls of the unknown. Not a lot, the numbers have shown that there's not a safety issue when we send those the CARES folks out to these calls. Speaking on the medical directions through the through Arizona State Department of Health Services, our EMTs are covered under the state statutes that they don't. That's their medical directions. They have the ability to assess these individuals, take vital signs on them, and it's really empowering these EMTs to make good medical decisions, where sometimes that can get lost on the fire truck. But just to speak personally, when I went through paramedic school, one of the hardest things to learn as a paramedic is an assessment. And getting these EMTs that exposure to being able to dig into what the problem is with the individual that is down or is having a crisis or whatever that looks like is only going to make them a better EMT. They're also getting exposure to talking on the radio. They're also getting to make those captain level decisions on what is the best appropriate care for this individual. If the call gets out of their scope, where they need a higher level of care, they have the ability to upgrade it to calling an ambulance that has a paramedic on it and transfer that care over to this to the medic, and then therefore they will go to the hospital and get assessed from a doctor. Just a little back history too, the Flagstaff Fire Department has had two, I will say, pseudo care programs. We used to call them CARTs, where we had a paramedic and a EMT on board. And I think what Mike established, I think what the city established, and what I'm seeing now is it's not the best solution for these individuals. It could be as simple as giving them a ride to the shelter. It could be upgrading it to a crisis team, a full response from Taros, or it could just be giving them the resources that we carry on the van to get them through the day and get them to a warm place and, you know, water sandwiches we hand out, and just addressing the true need of this person is the flexibility that this CARES van has.
Absolutely. Thanks for that, Seth. You touch on a lot of points that I definitely want to loop back to. One of the things that I think came up with your perspective on dispatch, as well as, you know, Brian's point about safety, that's certainly not an isolated concern across, you know, communities that are implementing, co-response models or some sort of collaboration among first responders and mental health professionals. However, the data is starting to speak to once folks enter sort of that queue. So 988, that's our, you know, parallel system to 911. Folks are coming into a crisis system, being triaged, and appropriate resources either are being, you know, provided over the phone, telephonically, or a crisis unit is coming out. Very few of those calls nationally come back to the 911 system to request, you know, a law enforcement or an EMS upgrade. Seth, maybe I guess all of you could speak to that. What are we seeing locally, you know, in Northern Arizona with the Flagstaff Care Program, as far as, you know, once somebody enters that care queue, so to speak, how's that trajectory going? What are dispositions looking like? Are they coming back to law enforcement, for example?
Well, Brian, I'll speak real quick on that, if that's okay. When I talk about buy-in with our firefighters, the big concern was the safety. As a supervisor, when I was on an engine, that was always my first priority, was safety, whether it was a medical, whether it was a structure, whatever that looks like. Part of my job is to show them the data and reinforce the fact that we're seeing, I think we're 1-2% where we have to upgrade that to a police officer because of what's going on in the scene. And reinforcing with these individuals on the CARES that if you are not safe, it is not a safe environment, pull out, get in the van, and request the appropriate resources that are needed. We're not I think the sentiment has kind of passed with some of our individuals. We have some that still hold on to it, which they have the right to do, but we're just not. I think the Taros team is doing a great job of categorizing these. And if there's a safety issue, the first phone call is usually to me. So I take it very seriously, and you know, just continue that education and reassurance that you have the ability to upgrade to an officer if necessary. You have the ability to get out of that scene if it gets unsafe. And please let me know so that I can address the root issue.
Absolutely. And you know, Seth, I'm hoping you can tee this up for Brad. I'd like to get Brad into the conversation. You know, from the work you're doing with 911 dispatch, once somebody enters that the care queue and the care unit is dispatched, can you kind of walk through what that would look like for somebody who's going to then step into, you know, field crisis or mobile crisis services? And then Brad, if you could speak to that piece, you know, once you take the baton from the 911 side.
Yeah, I think for the dispatch questions, that's Brian's going to be the go-to for that as far as answering the being able to take that and be the best responder.
Sounds good.
I'll just speak from the 911, and then Brian, I'll pass it to you for what happens on the crisis side if it gets shifted over there. But the dispatchers, they have run cards in dispatch of what those calls when they come into 911. How they categorize certain things, whether it's chest pain, whether it's, you know, heart attack, whether it's a stroke, things like that. But the frequency of these man downs, as we call them, we get a lot of them. And the dispatchers are very knowledgeable of where this could be going. But just some of the questions they might ask is, are you with the patient? Can you see if the patient's breathing? What are they wearing? Things like that. And so when they come into 911, we have different dispatch models that happens. And Mike created a new dispatch model, which is called an Omega. And that's a way that it's a non-emergent call for an unknown problem. And so on the other side of that, we dispatch out as Alpha and Delta, which Delta is lights and sirens on the fire side. But the classification for this CARES to go out is an Omega assignment. They look at the call on their tablet. They read the notes. They have the ability to call the dispatchers for clarification, and they choose the best route to go, which can get challenging, especially which happened last week with all the snow, and whether it looks like it could be a possible medical. So they have a lot of flexibility to ask those questions. They also have the ability to call the guidance center up here to see if they have room for what could possibly be coming their way. And they also have the ability to call the shelter to say, hey, this person's coming in, which I'll transition there with that warm handoff to Brian. And then as if they get on scene and it's a mental health issue, then that's where it would transition over to Brian's response on the tarot side.
Excellent. I appreciate that. I think we can all harken back to, you know, the historical disposition of a patient, you know, under the man down category or a frequent flyer category. And oftentimes it would be the emergency department, a local emergency department, or in the case of, you know, mental health crisis, so often that disposition would be jail. And it seems like this collaboration is really opening up the potential endpoint for an individual experiencing crisis. And, you know, Brian and Brad, I welcome you back into the conversation there to kind of talk about, you know, what that mobile crisis response looks like and what disposition looks like now.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Brian.
Sure. Yeah. So we, you know, when we show up on scene, it's us and the fire EMT, and we just sort of approach the situation from the standpoint of how can we help? And the nice thing about the care unit is if the person says, I don't want help, and we've, you know, had that conversation and they don't want anything to do with us, we can just say, all right, stay safe and go on to the next call. And that actually gives us a ton of flexibility. And I think is really important from a safety standpoint too, because when an ambulance or fire truck responds to a scene, they're sort of bound to do specific things. There's only a few specific outcomes that can come from that. You know, an ambulance pretty much has to take someone to the hospital, or police, you know, they have to, depending on the situation, they might have to move the person or arrest the person. Whereas when we come, we can offer a variety of things, support, we can offer to transport them somewhere, we can offer to connect them to services. So much more flexibility, including if they just say, I don't want anything to do with you, then we are just fine with that. And so I think that that's huge in sort of decreasing these situations that can escalate and can become a danger thing, or a situation where someone gets arrested is when they're feeling cornered or forced into something. And with the care unit, we don't have to do that. And that's ended up looking like we have some data on this, and only about 1% of the times that care unit is dispatched do we end up actually having to call law enforcement to come sort of back us up because the situation has, you know, become dangerous. So that 1%, I mean, that's something we're really proud of. That's, you know, 99% of the people we see aren't going to be, you know, in a situation where they might end up getting arrested or, you know, worse. And so that's, you know, from a, no matter how you look at it, whether from a financial standpoint or from a sort of social justice standpoint, we're really proud of that. And I think that's really huge.
Yeah. Matt, I want to add on that too. I think our community, by the use of care, we're also moving in a way of moving away from criminalizing mental health and substance use disorders when people aren't committing crimes. So a lot of times, as Brian mentioned, we're not using the ambulance, but also we're filling the jails less and a lot less calls for law enforcement. So they're being treated by someone with some specialized mental health training and an EMT. And I think a lot of these calls we run on are people that are homeless and have really chronic substance use disorders, and we're trying to get them into needed services, but not criminalize them or judge them negatively in the process. Our teams work great together as far as just addressing the needs that the call person on call has and keeping them safe too. I did a ride along a few weeks ago, and we had a gentleman passed out in an area where he's very close to a busy road, and so our team got him off of that road, you know, and got him into service as quick as possible, so there wasn't an absent, you know, an accident that that would have significant consequence on him, but also for a lot of other people to see. So I think there's a number of ways care really helps the community in getting people to, you know, maybe better resources to address their root distress or their causes, instead of kind of the historic way of criminalizing a lot of the folks that we go on call.
Absolutely. It's such an incredible program to support outcomes that I think are so supportive of already stressed services across a community, and really linking to other services that can help, I don't want to say solve the problem, but certainly support individuals on their journey, you know, whether it's towards you know, supporting a mental health condition or a substance use disorder, or attaining housing. This is certainly a multifaceted program that you've all put together. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
Before we go, what's that? Go ahead.
One other thing just to throw out, we run over usually over 100 calls per month too. So there's some days that we could be running from 3 to 8 or 9 calls on a day in a shift. So our teams are quite busy treating people all over Flagstaff.
I remember seeing, Brian, you had put together a report, and I think Mike at the time, for the Flagstaff City Council about kind of what did year one look like and making a plan for year two forward. Well, where's care now? Because I know your volumes were off the charts. I remember some of your leadership staff talking about, hey, we could easily staff another unit, which I understand comes with, you know, the logistics of, you know, operations and finances and all that sort of stuff. But can you guys speak a little bit, you know, to where you are now, 2 years into this, and, you know, what others looking to get on the same trajectory could kind of work towards in their first 2 years? Where are you?
Yeah, I think, so we've continued sort of in the same trajectory as, you know, what we presented at that city council meeting. Our volume, I think in year two, has actually even increased by a little bit. So we launched in March of 2022, and last I checked, we're coming up on 3,000 total dispatches in that amount of time. So definitely staying very busy. And I think we see a lot of different directions that we could go, including, you know, expanding to have a second unit that maybe covers a greater number of hours of each day, or more sort of follow-up care so that people we see, we can sort of continue to keep tabs on, including, you know, if someone does end up in the hospital that we've seen, you know, can there be an extension of the care unit that sort of helps with some discharge planning and wraparound support to connect them to services they need. There's also, you know, we have some great shelters here in Flagstaff, but I think at times it would be nice if there was more of a sort of social detox type place that we could take people, where it's shelter, but then there's also some light, you know, substance use discussions that might move a person more toward, you know, motivation to get into long-term treatment and things like that. So I think there's a lot of different directions that we see that could be beneficial. And then obviously, you know, money is always the key component to that. So I think even in year two, we're still sort of in that we really want to gather strong data to be able to present for future directions and expansions and you know, more additional funding as well.
Absolutely. How about from your perspective, Seth? Where are you now and where are you headed?
That's a deep one, but I'll speak. I think Brian hit on a lot of them. I'll hit on the data collection first. I think that's an ever evolving process that Brian and I have had discussions on, and just making sure we're capturing what these individuals are doing on the cares. You know, the safety issues, the upgrades. We're working on that on our side pretty hard with fire, The 911 dispatch and the dispatchers with some of the turnover they've been challenged with, the just educating them on what a CARES call or a mega call looks like. So the data, I don't think we'll ever be to a point where that is completely done. But I just another touch on something that we've been involved with discussions. Part of the role of this unit is actually proactive outreach on the streets, not just getting dispatched to these calls, but actually just driving around and asking individuals that are seen, could be hiding in behind a bush or something like that, and just asking them, what do you need, and what kind of help do you need help? Very simple question on them. So just wanted to make sure I hit that highlight, because I think that's an important component. That another thing that Brian and I are trying to make sure the crews are doing, and capturing those good outreach numbers. So just another, you know, some other evolving things that we're looking at is my role to see my involvement, how much I'm involved, along with all the other job duties that come with that EMS captain. I'm getting stretched and needing to pass the buck on some things because I just can't get to them. So another challenge and another part of that evolving process. We had, with the hospital that was voted down this past year, we had a plan in place that we didn't know if it was going to get approved, but a separate housing for the care unit is something that is being looked at. Right now, it's being staffed at one of the fire stations and one of the community rooms that we took over. We've tried to make it as comfortable for them as possible, but I think there could be some validity in getting its own separate building that they can dispatch out of. And like Brian said, maybe it's two. Maybe there's one on the east side, one on the west side, make them have their own home, make them have their place where they feel comfortable, and they respond out of. Another part of my role in this was to see, with the EMT staffing and the Taros individual on the CARES unit, is this the best model? I don't have answers for that because it works now, but are we providing the best service for these individuals that are needing care? Do we put an RN on it? Do we put a CNA? Do we put another different level of care? And is it better if we had two firefighters on it, or is it better if we have two Taros people on it, or do we keep the combination? So those are all discussions being had, and fortunately in my position, that's being made by people up above me that, based on our data and based on our feedback, we see if there's any changes that are being needing to have.
Well, our time has flown by together today, but I want to thank each of you, Seth, Brian, Brad, for joining us today to talk about the CARE program and all the work that you've put in and continue to put into this program. Join us soon as we highlight other regional efforts across the state of Arizona to integrate first responder and mental health practices. And along the way, be sure to check out the vitalisthealth.org webpage for resources related to this topic. Well, on behalf of the Vitalist Health Foundation, I'm Matt Eckhoff. Thank you again for joining us today.